वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 24, Text Number 73. Te vayam norita sarve. Te vayam norita sarve. Praja sarje. Prajeshvaraha. Praja sarje. Prajeshvaraha. Anena dvasta tamasa. Anena dvasta tamasaha. Sisrikshmo vividita. Sorry. Vividha praja. Sisrikshmo vividha praja. Te vayam noditak sarve. Praja sarje prajeshvara anena dvasta tamasa shishrikshmo vividha praja devayam nodita sarve praja sarje prajeshvara anena dvasta tamasa Shishrikshmo vividha praja Devayam noritak sarve Praja sarje prajeshvara Anena dvasta tamasa Shishrikshmo vividha praja By him, Vayam, all of us, Norita, ordered, Sarve, all, Praja Sarje, at the time of creating population, Praja Ishvaraha, the controllers of all living entities, Anena, by this, Dvasta tamasa, being freed from all kinds of ignorance. Shishrikshma, we created. Vividha, various kinds of. Praja, living entities. Translation. When all the Prajapatis were ordered to create by Lord Brahma, we chanted these prayers in praise of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and became completely free from all ignorance. Thus, we were able to create different types of living entities. By Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, we can understand that the various types of living entities were created simultaneously at the very beginning of the creation. The nonsensical Darwinian theory of evolution is not applicable here. It is not that intelligent human beings did not exist millions of years ago. On the contrary, it is understood that the most intelligent creature, Lord Brahma, was first created. Then Lord Brahma created other saintly sages like Marichi, Bhrigu, Atreya, Vashistha, and Lord Shiva. They, in their turn, created different types of bodies according to karma. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapiladev told his mother that the living entity gets a particular type of body in accordance with his work, and that this body is decided upon by higher authorities. The higher authorities, as appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are Lord Brahma and all other Prajapatis and Manus. Thus, from the beginning of creation, it can be seen that the first creature is the most intelligent. It is not that so-called modern intelligence has developed by the gradual process of evolution. As stated in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, there is a gradual evolutionary process, but it is not the body that is evolving. All the bodily forms are already there. It is the spiritual entity or the spiritual spark within the body that is being promoted by the laws of nature under the supervision of superior authority. We can understand from this verse that from the very beginning of creation, different varieties of living entities were existing. It is not that some of them having become extinct. Everything is there. It is due to our lack of knowledge that we cannot see things in their proper perspective. In this verse, the word dvasta tamasaha is very important, for without being free of ignorance, one cannot control the different types of living entities. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Daiva Netreina, bodies are awarded under the supervision of superior powers. How can these superior powers control the evolutionary process of the living entity if they are not free from all perfection? The followers of the Vedic instructions cannot accept the Darwinian theory of evolution, for it is marred by imperfect knowledge. Please repeat the verse. When all the Prajapatis were ordered to create by Lord Brahma, we chanted these prayers in praise of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and became completely free from all ignorance. Thus, we were able to create different types of living entities. Amagyanatamarandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurum militam jaina tasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapatantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Scha Shri Rupam Sagrachutam Sahaganaraganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Scha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopeshi Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavanishvare Vrishabhanu Supta Devi Pranamani Hari Priyai panchakalpatrupyascha kripasindubhyayavacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhara shivasadi gaura bhaktavinda hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama 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 hare. So the Prabhupada is very clearly deconstructing the entire basis of material life or the rationale for material life in this day and age. There's a lot of propaganda in the world today about man's so-called superior intelligence. Technology is being touted as being basically, they're trying to say that technology is like the saving grace of mankind. The example is given of how computers, for instance, I remember my father, when I was a young boy, he got a computer for his company to do the accounts, and the computer took about as much space as from this pillar, that room. This one computer for doing the accounts for his company. It was a NASA company, so it was quite a lot of accounts, but still, it took that much room. Now, a machine to do those kind of accounts can be put in the size of your fingernail to do such simple things as accounts. So, like that. And as we see, some people are saying that computer memory and computers' abilities is like doubling almost every year or two. So it's like an exponential growth in technology and technological advancement. So something has emerged. Once upon a time, and Prabhupada gives this example sometimes of how the scientists say that they will eventually make us immortal, that they will be able to conquer death. And Prabhupada said it's like a post-dated check. They'll never actually be able to do it, but they keep saying it's just coming, soon we will be able to do like that. That's what they were saying. So now there's a new kind of immortality. It's something called the singularity. Put your hands up if you've ever heard of the singularity. Okay, one person. Anyone else heard of the singularity? So the singularity is an idea that at a certain point, there'll be a kind of merger of humans and machines. And that when this happens, there'll be a greater than human intelligence formed. Now the argument is that, you know, there are these supercomputers now which can compute much more quickly than the human brain can. They can do calculations, extremely complex calculations, much faster than the human brain can do. There's also recently some computer games came out where you can actually use brain waves to control what's going on in the screen. I've not really investigated that, but apparently there's some kind of way in which brain waves can be accessed and used to control computers. And it popular in like science fiction is the idea that eventually you'll be able to download what you know onto a computer. And also you can upload knowledge from a computer into your brain. This is also a kind of something which people are starting to say that, yeah, it's not going to be long before this can happen. So there's this idea of a physical merging of brain and computer. There's something called nanotechnology. I don't know if probably most of you have heard of nanotechnology, where machines are made at the microscopic level. They have an ability now to create machines at the microscopic level. And there are some people that are saying these machines are also self-replicable. So people are starting to say that, you know, with this advance of technology, self-replicable machines combined with the human condition will create something which they call an intelligence explosion. It's kind of so arrogant, the kind of things they come up with. But anyway, they come up with this idea that there'll be an intelligence explosion. What that means is that we will become so intelligent, we'll be able to do so many things so quickly that you'll no longer be able to predict anything. Because things will change so quickly, there'll be such quantum leaps in our understanding of the way things work, that you'll no longer be able to make reliable predictions because anything will be possible. So this is what the scientists are kind of touting now. This is the latest, this is the kind of, everyone is so enamored by technology, so enamored by what it can do, these interactive games that people have, the way that graphics can be controlled, the way that you can create a whole reality. They can create actors now on the screen who don't actually exist. They're just digital formations, digital personalities who can be made to appear almost like humans on the screen when you watch a movie. This could never be done before. Like they were talking about, one of the reasons why Lord of the Rings was never made into a movie was because they could never depict many of the things that were there. But as soon as the technology was enabled to depict these things, then they were able to make these kinds of movies. And these movies, they draw people into a kind of this fantasy world. So there's this idea that there'll be an intelligence explosion. That the mixture of human being, human intelligence, and machine intelligence will create this amazing intelligent reality. And there's also an idea, which is also being touted by very serious people, that one day you'll be able to upload your soul to a computer. Right? You know, first of all, you know, they'll have these interfaces where you'll be able to interface kind of memory, you know, advanced memory and advanced computer, advanced computing, kind of link it to your brain. And so this transfer between the brain and the computer will become like almost seamless. So it stands to reason, you know, if you follow that logical kind of construct, it sounds reasonable that, yeah, you could be able to upload your soul. Why not? You know, your whole reality can be uploaded to a computer. And then you can actually create your own reality. Right? You don't have to be bound to this reality of, you know, very gross material kind of stuff. You can be in a much more subtle reality where you can actually create computer programs to suit yourself. The soul can actually be uploaded to a computer and create its own reality. So they're saying, predictions, serious predictions from serious people. They're saying that within 30 years, we will have the technological means to create superhuman intelligence. Shortly after that, the human era will be ended. So this is it, this is evolution. Yeah, it's taken us, you know, we've come from this, from these like single-celled creatures. We were in the ocean, somehow or another we've developed means to propel ourselves through the ocean. Then land came and we somehow or another with our flippers crawled onto the land and developed feet and hands and eyes and so many things developed until we've come to this human state where, hey, we were cavemen and now we're driving around in these BMWs with advanced, you know, computer technology. You don't even have to drive the thing anymore, it drives itself, you know. It won't be long before the cars will be able to fly. Just the other day I read about a car that they've invented which can take off within a few hundred feet. So like that. Brave new world, you know. Even now, biological engineering, you know, you can put the genes of fish into tomatoes or whatever it is, you know, there's combinations. Nothing is taboo anymore. Anything can be done. So, you know, this onward going development of technology means that the human era will be ended in 30 years from now. And we will just be, you know, the human beings, those of us who are just limited to what we've got, will die off. And these superhumans that are linked with machines, they will become the superior race because they will be able to think so much faster than us. They will be able to act so much faster than us with bionic limbs, etc. So many people are caught up in this. So many people believe this is the reality. The majority of the people on the earth, and most people, they read the newspapers, they read about these technologies. They don't know anything. They're ignorant. And so they're completely enamored by this whole idea that life will be so much better, that it'll be so much of an improvement. So this is the ultimate arrogance of the materialist. So, actually, someone who's sober and observes the world with a cool, calm mind, brain, intelligence, they can see that actually the opposite is true. That the more we advance technologically, apparent advancement, actually the more problems arise. There are different examples of that, like for instance allopathic medicine. The idea of, it's interesting because allopathic medicine takes sources from plants, but then it, what would you say, it synthesizes them, it kind of changes them into essential elements. And they try to say that these essential elements will cure our diseases. But we see actually that all they do is they stop symptoms. In Ayurveda, it's known that acidosis, acid blood, is one of the major causes of disease. That once your blood is acidic in nature, as opposed to being neutral, then diseases become rampant. So, if you have acidosis, if you have burning belly a lot, you should recognize that this is the beginning of a series of very dangerous and problematic health problems. And you've got to solve that problem. So Ayurveda prescribes different kinds of foods, different diet, different ways of living, by which you can counteract acidosis, and you can bring your blood back to a good level. But what allopathic medicine tells you is, take antacid. So they've created these very tasty antacids, you know, yogurty flavored, pineapple flavored antacids, which, hey, problem solved, no longer a burning stomach. You think everything is fine. You can go along in your life, no problem with any pain. But actually it causes more diseases. So, like this, often the medicines that they prescribe, although they may counteract a particular symptom, they also, on the other side, create side effects which are harmful. And then they give you another medicine to counteract the side effects of the first medicine. So like this, supposedly it's meant to help us, but it actually doesn't. And why is it like that? Prophet. There are many natural methods of healing in the world, but they're all, what would you say, they're all suppressed, they're all kind of like stymied. People, they make fun of these kinds of things. They say that it's quackery, it's nonsense. Because they cannot be patented, you cannot make profit from these natural remedies. But if you can take something and patent it, you can make profit. So this is the whole motivation behind this allopathic system of medicine. It's profit. And actually, if you investigate this, you'll find that it's all profit motivated. Agriculture is another way in which apparently solving problems actually creates more problems. So how are we helped by advanced technology? Sometimes people say that mobile phones, computers, internet, it's helping us. You know, we can do things so much faster. Instead of having to wait 2 weeks for a letter to come, you send someone a letter, it takes 2 weeks to get there. When they eventually sit down to write the reply, it takes 2 weeks to come back. Whereas with email, instant. You got the message out there, you've got the information back. Improvement. Right? So, actually, interestingly, in 1977, the first example of this technology had arrived. The telex machine had come. And telex machine was the very first instant communication device. It was pretty primitive. You just had one little strip of paper, running line of text on it. But it was much faster than snail mail, by sending things by post office. So the devotees were thinking, hey, this is really good for our preaching, for our BBT publishing, etc. It'll be good to have that. So they asked Prabhupada, can we have that? So Prabhupada wrote back to them, 1977. He said, the installing of telex communications for our main temples is not required. Then they will gossip more through the telex. So, you know, this is like this one strip of paper. And Prabhupada could see that just this one little strip of paper with, you know, running sentences is like this, we'll start to gossip using that. So what to speak, imagine if the internet had arrived in 1977 and it was presented to before Srila Prabhupada, you know? I mean, the potential for gossip on the internet is like a thousandfold more than this telex system. And we can see it. You know, there are so many websites out there now from so many different groups, whether they're Vaishnavas or linked to Vaishnavas or kind of Apasampradayas or whatever, where people are just espousing so many theories. You know, are these people self-realized people that can put this up? Who knows? But so much gossip is being promulgated through this internet system. Mobile phones. You know, once upon a time, if you were at home and the telephone rang, okay, you'd pick it up and you'd talk to the person. But if you were out somewhere else, then too bad, that communication had to wait. So, hey, so much better now. We've got the mobile phone. Instantly you can call up. You know, you can, and it appears to have some benefits. You know, you're going to be late for lunch, you can immediately call home, I'm going to be late for lunch. Okay, I'll put your lunch in the oven. Whatever, like that. But actually, what's happening is that, you know, you go on vacation, you go, you want to have some sort of retreat, you want to have some peaceful time, you come. Anyone can get into your life at any time. And especially if you're working for some company, they make it a rule that you have to have your phone on all the time so they can get you to come in for work, to do some more work. So, rather than actually saving you time, it's actually taking up more time. So if we really examine these different technologies, if you really look at them carefully, okay, maybe, you know, you're out on the train somewhere, and someone else is somewhere else, and they want to get hold of you, so they can get hold of you instantly. But if there were no trains, if the society was not arranged the way it is, where people have to go off to work somewhere else, somebody hundreds of miles away, Prophet would describe it as breakneck civilization. You get in your car, you drive an hour to work every day, you know, you drive, you get back in your car in the evening, you drive back home at breakneck speeds, breakneck civilization. Prabhupada criticized this so much. But now we take it for granted, that's the way life is, that's the way it's meant to be. So therefore, yeah, in that scenario, maybe these technologies are helpful. But we're not meant to be in that scenario in the first place. So actually, all that's happening is that problems are being compounded. So, this internet activity has also been shown that it actually creates psychological problems. That people become so dependent on internet relationships, whereby it's just language, it's just information. You're getting a stream of information coming from one end, you're giving a stream of information out. The relationship is reduced to information. And people, at a certain point, after some time where they've just been immersed in relationships which are based on information, they don't know how to communicate in terms of actual body language. The whole idea, the whole method of body language becomes fearful, because you're not sure how to. It's just like in anything, if you don't know how to do something and you go in amongst a group of people that do know how to do that thing, you appear to be at a disadvantage. And sometimes people become a little nervous that they don't want to show that I'm at a disadvantage. So like that, people are becoming disadvantaged in the sense that they can't form proper relationships. So then they try to shun relationships. They don't want to have interpersonal relationships because they don't know how to deal. They don't know, they've lost the art of interpersonal dealings. So this is another way in which apparently an advancement actually leads to a debilitation. So all of this is designed to, this whole modern system, people moving to the cities, it's designed to remove us from nature. But what we forget is that actually we've become so removed from nature that it's becoming impossible for nature to improve us. Nature is there to improve us. The reason why the world has been created the way it has been created, there's a purpose behind everything. All of this outside, you look outside this window, we're fortunate in Mayapur that we can see a lot of nature all around us. Although many of us may be sitting behind a computer for most of the time. But still, it's just over there, and sometimes you can go and immerse yourself in that nature. And we should understand that this nature can teach us many things. So there's one verse in Srimad Bhagavatam which kind of describes this. This is Canto 11, Chapter 9, Verse 31. The verse is, although the absolute truth is one without a second, the sages have described him in many different ways. Therefore, one may not be able to acquire very firm or complete knowledge from one spiritual master. So I thought that was interesting. This is saying here that one spiritual master may not be enough. That you may need more than one spiritual master. So what does that mean? So Jiva Goswami, he commented on this verse. And he said, since it is commonly understood that one is to accept a single spiritual master, why is it recommended that one learn from many so-called spiritual masters appearing in the forms of ordinary material objects? The explanation is that one's worshipable spiritual master will instruct one in many departments of knowledge by giving lessons gleaned from ordinary objects. As recommended by the Brahmana Avaduta, one can strengthen the teachings received from one's acharya and avoid transgressing his orders by observing ordinary things in nature. One should not mechanically receive the teachings of one's guru. The disciple should be thoughtful and with his own intelligence realize in practice what he has heard from his spiritual master by observing the world around him. In this sense, one may accept many gurus, though not those who preach against the knowledge received from the bona fide spiritual master. In other words, one should not hear from persons like the atheist Kapila. So these modern scientists, they're like the atheist Kapila, and they're coming up with all this nonsense, and we should just ignore that nonsense. But actually, as noted here by Jiva Goswami, we should be observing nature. So, you know, we've been removed from nature so much, even as devotees, many devotees living in the cities, working in artificial environments, driving to work in air-conditioned cars, completely cut off from the world around them. Maybe once a year, get an opportunity to go out into the countryside and observe nature. But an important point is being made here, that actually, guru may give instructions, but you actually have to understand those instructions in the working of the world. You have to observe the world. And that way, the teachings of the guru will unfold. I can think of some experiences in the sense of, for instance, we may hear, if we regularly are hearing from devotees about the subject matter of spiritual life, you'll hear certain shlokas, certain purports may come up again and again over the period of time we're involved in Krishna consciousness. And you may hear these shlokas, these purports, a number of times, and they'll have a certain amount of meaning to you. But one day, you'll sit down in a class, and the speaker will speak a particular verse and purport that you may have heard many times, but that one time, it will make a huge difference. You'll have like an epiphany, you'll have a realization. So why is it that you have a realization at that stage, hearing the same verse and purport, when you didn't have that realization previously hearing those same verses and purports? What's the difference? The difference is experience. Before, you didn't have a certain set of experiences, so that verse didn't have a certain relevance to you. But after a certain set of experiences, suddenly you hear that verse again in the context of that speaker's class, and it makes a difference. You have a realization. This is a result of observances and experiences over a period of time. So like that, the guru may give an instruction. You may think you've understood that instruction, but it may actually take quite some time for that instruction to become relevant to you due to a certain set of experiences that you go through. So, giving examples from nature, Prabhupada extensively gave examples from nature like that. And a lot of them we can find in Light of the Bhagavad. Light of the Bhagavad is such a beautiful exposition of examples from nature. So the very first verse of Light of the Bhagavad, in this verse, number one, it says, the arrival of clouds accompanied by thunder and flashes of lightning all over the sky provides a picture of life-giving hope. Covered by deep bluish clouds, the sky appears artificially dressed. The thunder and lightning within the clouds are signs of hope for a new way of life. Okay, so that's the verse. Very descriptive, a lot of nice descriptions. You know, it really, you really get a picture of a stormy sky with the clouds dressing the sky. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, the serene sky, limitlessly expansive, is compared to the absolute truth. The living entities are truths manifested in relation with the modes of material nature. The deep bluish cloud covers only an insignificant portion of the limitless sky. And this fractional covering is compared to the quality of ignorance or forgetfulness of the real nature of the living being. A living entity is as pure as the limitless sky. He becomes covered by the cloud of forgetfulness. However, in his tendency for enjoying the material world. Because of this quality called tamas, ignorance, he considers himself different from the absolute whole and forgets his purity, which is like that of the clear sky. This forgetfulness gives rise to separatism and false ego. Thus, the forgetful living entities, individually and collectively, make sounds like thundering clouds. I am this, it is ours, or it is mine. Or, the singularity is coming, in 30 years, there will be singularity. So this is what it's like. I saw actually a video, and they were talking about this singularity, this merging of human and machine intelligence. And one man, he looked very authoritative, and he was saying that this is not a question of whether this is good or bad, or whether this is right or wrong. It is going to happen. So it reminded me, when I read this verse, it was just like, what is it? These clouds, thundering clouds, you know, very authoritatively saying, it will happen, technology will prevail, there will be singularity, there will be this merging of man and machine, the human race will, you know, humanity will cease to be. So like that, thundering clouds, based on ignorance. This mood of false separatism is called the quality of Rajas, and it gives rise to a creative force for separate lordship over the mode of Tamas. The flash of lightning is the only beam of hope that can lead one to the path of knowledge, and therefore it is compared to the mode of Sattva, or goodness. So such a nice description from Srila Prabhupada, using the world. You know, something that we see, just last night there was such a beautiful storm. If you looked out of the window and you saw those flashes of lightning in the sky and the clouds. And sometimes, many times here in Mayapur, you see these beautiful monsoon skies and flashes of lightning and bluish clouds like that. Now, if you live in a city and you work in some, you know, office building, practically speaking, you never see that. You never have that experience. The majority of people in this world are not having that experience. They're not getting to feel these emotions, correlate the teachings of the spiritual master with what they see in front of them, like this. So in this way, Prabhupada is illustrating how nature can be used, and how the materialists, they try to cover over this nature. They try to cover the whole thing with ignorance, and we become affected by that ignorance. So they're thinking that they can control nature. But again, in Bhagavatam, Prabhupada describes, we have no control over the earth's productiveness, for it is naturally under the full control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, you know, the scientists, by using these machines, by using these chemicals, by using gene-modified technology, they're saying that they can conquer, starvation and hunger. They can, you know, this whole overpopulation problem, they're saying there's a problem with overpopulation, can be fixed by gene-modified technologies. But Prabhupada says, this actually, the earth's productiveness is naturally under the full control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By his order, the Lord can make the earth produce sufficiently or insufficiently. If a pious king rules the earth, according to the Shastric injunctions, there will naturally be regular rainfall and sufficient produce to provide for all men. There will be no question of exploitation, for everyone will have enough. Black marketeering and other corrupt dealings will then automatically stop. Simply ruling land cannot solve man's problems unless the leader has spiritual capabilities. So like that, again, we can see that the materialistic way, this way of evolution, which it's amazing how, even though evolution has been debunked our Jhutakarma Prabhu and Sariputta Prabhus have actually extensively delved into these whole areas, and they've proven in so many ways that evolution is actually complete nonsense. This whole theory of evolution of Darwinism, complete nonsense. It cannot be sustained. But yet, it's still being taught in all the schools. Everyone in school is learning about Darwin's theory of evolution. It's a social theme which is being constantly promoted, and yet it's completely false. And of course, it's all desire. It's all being promoted out of a desire for profit, because the world has been taken over by the Vaishya mentality. So, like that, in so many ways, the materialists are trying to control us. But yet we find that actually, the closer we can get to nature, the more we can actually, it will help us to understand our actual relationships in Krishna consciousness. Because that's the way it's designed. Krishna has designed this material world in such a way as to help us. We've been put into this material world. Why? It's a prison. It's a reformatory place. This is a place for rebellious souls. So, what is reform? Many people complain that the prison system nowadays doesn't reform prisoners anymore. There used to be some means to reform prisoners, but it doesn't do that anymore. Of course, one reason may be because now prisons have also been privatized. Now prisons are companies, and they want more prisoners. So hey, why would you reform them? You can make money out of prisons. Again, profit. Everything is the way of profit. But actually, this material world is a prison, and it's designed very nicely to reform us. We will suffer from drought or from starvation because of our sinfulness. We will be put into that atmosphere. We will be born in Africa in a village where there's no rain. Wherever it is, whether it's Africa or whether it's Mongolia or wherever it is, we'll be born into that place due to our sinfulness in our previous life. And we will learn a lesson from that. And it will teach us how to... It will give us an impetus to give up material life. That is the purpose of this material world. The purpose of this nature is to give us this impetus to give up material life and seek spiritual life. Because nature is actually an overwhelming force. And if you immerse yourself in it, you begin to see that it's an overwhelming force. And you begin to understand that this force is controlled by higher authorities. Prabhupada describes in this purport about the higher authorities. About how actually these higher authorities have always existed. The very first higher authority was Lord Brahma, the most intelligent person. He came first. So like that, the whole thing is constructed to help us to advance in Krishna consciousness, to help us gain realization, and to help us give up material absorption. So I'm going to stop there. Any comments or questions? Questions? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.